everybody. Welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I'm here with Dom, and we have something really, really special for you guys today. It's fitting that I think we're releasing this on Christmas Eve, the late night Christmas Eve. Dom, how you doing?
As you can imagine, I am full of festive cheer, and we thought we'd have a very special gift to give you here today.
Yeah. Well, Dom, why don't you set up what that gift actually is?
Okay, so I know a lot of us enjoyed the whole campaigning process for Survivor Second Chance, and a big part of that was the interviews that were going on at that time, people saying why they should be brought back, what they expected to happen if they did make it out there. And that was fun to listen to, but a lot of it was tempered by the fact that you knew they couldn't tell the full story because no one's going to actually divulge all of their secrets in public. There's going to be a lot of hidden information there that we just wouldn't be privy to at the time. And we thought, well, okay, maybe we'll get to listen to that after the season's over, but then that's 6 or 7 months down the line, and by that time people's memories have faded and maybe their memories are distorted by what happened back then. They've got some new agenda that they're trying to push. They're not going to reveal everything to us. So we thought, why not try and make like a time capsule, if you like. We'll get someone's thoughts in a private forum where they won't have to reveal it. We'll embargo that until after the season's over, and then we can look back on that in a few months' time and see exactly what they were thinking at the time and how that contrasts with how it played out in reality.
Yeah, and so that is exactly what we've done. We got on the line with Spencer Bledsoe the night before he ended up leaving for Cambodia, and that is what is going to be coming to you guys today.
Yeah, and these are the latest thoughts of someone as they were about to go out there. For the second half of this conversation, Spencer is in the sequester hotel whispering to us to make sure he isn't like overheard by miners or by other castaways. So this is your up-to-date information at the time. Obviously, now that it's Christmas as opposed to the middle of May, we know exactly what happened. We can look back and compare notes there. But if you want to hear what somebody was thinking at the time as they were about to go out there, this is the best you're going to find, I think.
Yeah, and before we throw it over to that, a couple of things to let you guys know about just what we're up to in the off-season. We will be putting out our Survivor Season 31 in review podcast very shortly, and then after that, we're going to be hitting some interviews pretty hard. It looks like Spencer is going to be down to come and talk to us again now that it's all over. Steven appears to be in. Kelly Wentworth is confirmed. And we're going to hopefully get maybe a couple others to go way back in time, talk about maybe some older seasons, and then also, of course, how things played out on Cambodia. So certainly subscribe on iTunes for all of that. And follow us on Twitter, where you can find Dom at DomHRV, and I am at Colin Stone. And while you are following me on Twitter, you may notice at the top of my Twitter page is pinned a link to watch the greatest reality TV show of all time, South Korea's The Genius. This offseason, if you have not yet gotten on board with that, maybe this is your first time hearing of it, you've just found us, because clearly you would have heard of it if you'd ever listened to us before, or you've just been holding out. Now this offseason is 100% the time to get caught up, so definitely do that. And we are also planning on doing concluding our season-by-season Genius coverage by finishing our Season 3 Genius coverage this offseason as well.
Yeah, I think if you've been listening to us for any length of time, you will have been converted to The Genius by now. If you haven't, then by all means, give it a chance. Just give it one episode if that's all you want to give it, and I promise you, you will be an addict by the end. And if you do end up following along with it, I'd recommend listening to Scott and Mike's Genius podcast. They were covering it live during Season 4, just like we did, and now they're going back from Season 1, going episode by episode, so you won't be spoiled for stuff ahead of time, and just going through all of that and it's a good introduction to a show which, for all of its many virtues, can be a bit hard to get into. So I highly recommend checking that out and just checking The Genius out in general.
Yeah, definitely do check that out. You can just find that by Googling Genius Cast, Scott and Mike, things along those lines. Dom, I think that's enough for now. Let's throw it over to Spencer. Okay, so here we are, and we have something very special for you guys today. It is currently Tuesday, May 19th, 2015, and we are on the line now with Spencer Bledsoe, who this time in about 30 hours is going to be standing on a stage, presumably about to get his ticket to Cambodia. Spencer, first of all, how you doing? What's it like right now? I think this is really what we want to do is basically make a time capsule of what it's like being you right now.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's like I wanted to do the interview because I think it would be interesting to do the same thing and for me to really have like an objective memory of how I felt before the game. It's sort of like your memory is always colored by what is shown on the show and how things go down. So I think this is kind of like an interview that hasn't been done. And I think like I'll get a lot out of just talking through what I'm thinking before the game. And as you said, like putting it in a time capsule. But I'm doing pretty good. The storm is coming, so it's definitely like the amount of calls and texts going back and forth between people is just increasing. So
I'm sure, yeah.
Well, yeah, okay. It's crazy, but it's good now.
Yeah, give us a sense of all of that, because I think, you know, obviously the fan base is consumed by all of the hype around this at the moment, but I think it's difficult for us, you know, even knowing that there's a lot of this communication happening, to know just what the full extent of that is.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like everyone, they're like, it sort of ebbs and flows with the communication. And you can kind of tell what people are thinking when it happens. Like, there was definitely a lot of reaching out, at least in my experience, right when things were announced. And I would, you know, I got contacted by, like, you know, whether it was Twitter DMs from, you know, with like T-Bird, like very small surface things, or whether it was, you know, more aggressive, like, hey, we need to talk, from Troyzan. Like, people started reaching out, you know, around the announcement. And then also, the last few days, I think, like, it's sort of hit people how close the actual, you know, going out to film is. So I think that has also sped up the process. But you have to be friendly with everyone. And like, I've made a huge effort, whether it's just like reaching out, you know, and keeping things very, very, you know, vague and on the surface, like with like Joe from season 30 or with T-Bird, like, you know, really having just like, oh, loved your game, like you were good in challenges, really excited we might get to play again, like just generic shit. I've tried to do that and be friendly. And I've also, you know, of course, when someone calls me, I will take the call and be friendly, because I think it'd be foolish not to.
Yeah. Well, let's get right into it. Who are you feeling really good about now as you're about to head out there?
Sure. And, you know, it has a lot to do with like who you have a good feeling about based on things that aren't, you know, conversation that was spurred just by this returning player stuff. Like, anything that is said only once the, you know, the season is announced, you always have to take with a boulder of salt. And that's why, you know, when I met Shireen at the Live Know-It-Alls and we talked and we got along, and I didn't think she was going to be in the mix, I think we established some trust that, you know, went beyond just, you know, expecting to be returning players together. We've both talked to Kelly, to PG a little bit. We both like Steven. I like Tasha. We have a decent number of people that we feel like could be good people to work with.
Yeah, just quickly, you mentioned the Live Know-It-Alls there. How long has this all been in the works for, and how long have you known about it as compared to how long the general fan base has known about it?
Sure, yeah. So, yeah, that's actually, the timeline is a little fuzzy, where like not everyone got called at the same time, I don't think, as far as season 30. I got called in early March, and the Live Know-It-Alls happened very shortly after that. So Steven had also gotten called, and we talked at the Live Know-It-Alls a little bit. But, you know, Steven and I had already known each other before that event, before we got called. So we had kind of, we already, you know, it wasn't weird for either of us to be reaching out to each other about stuff going on in our lives. And then the same notable thing happened to come up in our lives, which was, you know, this season. However, for the season 30 people, I don't think they had heard by that point. I don't think it was unclear if they would be included or how they would be included. So when we were talking, it was kind of news to Shireen, and we like, you know, we hung out with Shireen and we talked things through with her a little bit, but for the most part, we just, you know, hung out at that event with Shireen, not expecting to play with her.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned being, you know, sending kind of the generic message that anyone, I think, thinking about their situation would be sending to people like Joe or whatever. What are your end game plans right now? Who do you really feel? Is there anything you have laid out as far as you and I are going to go to the end together?
No. Okay. I haven't told anyone, like, you and me to the end. I mean, I know how I feel and what I think. I know that, like, Shireen is someone that I would feel actually pretty good, like, you know, being true to the end. And, you know, I think she's like very sound strategically and someone I feel really good about bouncing ideas off of all the way through. So yeah, of course there are people that, you know, I feel better about going to the end with than I do about others. And then, you know, with people like Steven, like I will always trust Steven to be a very self-interested player. So it, you know, definitely how our, you know, relationship evolves through the game will depend on circumstances where I have to be really aware of what his self-interest will be. But yeah, basically, no, I don't have any final two deals. I don't have any final three deals. I don't even really have anything too overt. I just have a decent group of people that I feel good about that, you know, we've shared with each other who we like and who we don't, that we've said, you know, we have a trust with each other that I'm hoping to end up on the same beach as.
Yeah, I heard the first part of that as I will always trust Steven, and an alarm bell started flashing in my head for a moment. But yeah, you said that at this stage you don't have any solid final two deals locked in or anything like that. Is there a kind of general understanding that any promise made to that effect pregame is likely to just be bullshit, that you know you can't make something on that scale and expect to follow through with it?
Yeah. I mean, the metagame as far as like pregame alliances, as far as leading up to the game, I think has shifted a lot, where there's people are definitely wary of that stuff. If I were to reach out to someone that I don't have a relationship with outside of the game and say, hey, like, we need to work together, we need to, like, you and me to the end, that will always come off as disingenuous. And people get a read for when they're being bullshitted. And then a whole other layer to this is, you know, there are a lot of people in this group who really don't like the idea of pregame alliances. And like Shane Powers comes to mind, where when some rumors started flying about, there were some rumors about a Blood vs. Water and One World pregame alliance, like all these crazy things being said, like, oh, everyone's being flown to Brad Culpepper's house, they're going to have strategy meetings, that Shane got really pissed off about it. And I think a lot of people got wary about it, that basically like, via Twitter and like all these fake Twitter accounts started popping up where these people felt like their games were being blown up. So I think there's absolutely more downside than upside to making, you know, an overt pregame alliance unless it's based on something really solid.
I wonder if you think the expectations around jury votes will change in a season like this, because you think back to the first All-Stars and then Heroes versus Villains, there's typically a lot of bitterness, if you want to call it that, or at least a lot of hurt feelings. And, you know, does that change in your mind how you have to play the game or who you want to be sitting at the end with? Like, do the inoffensive types who don't really have a good case to make for themselves become more scary in that kind of context?
So I think that I get what you're saying, that that historically in the returning player seasons, there have been higher than average hurt feelings. And, you know, as far like people go in with preconceived notions of where loyalties lie. And I think when those are broken, it probably stings more than when it's a stranger and the only promises they made to you during the game were, you know, during the game. Yeah, I think there's definitely, it makes a lot of sense that it could be that way where, you know, people will reward someone who was just kind of more likable and got less blood on their hands. And that effect might be larger in a returning player season. But I mean, I also think there's a huge issue with sample size where we only actually have two pure returning player seasons where everyone was a returnee. Mm-hmm. And sure, Amber and Sandra won those seasons, but I don't know that I'm going to assume for sure it's going to go down that way again.
Yeah, that's fair. I think this could definitely be the season, as we flagged up in one of our other preview podcasts. This could easily be the season that just kind of bucks that trend, because I think there are a lot of gamers out there. There are a couple things that I want to ask you about that just when we were talking about you in looking ahead at this season, I thought could be possible problems for you. And I'm interested in hearing how you've been trying to get around this. The first is, of course, something that's been good for you for the campaign trail is you are 100% to be out there. I assume you know that. I'm wondering how you feel like other people being aware of that is going to impact you when you're actually out there playing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it would impact me well. It's definitely something that has weighed on my mind. It's not a dynamic I'm happy about at all. Where, you know, most people I've talked to, you talk through a lot of generic things, and one of them is, oh, what do you think your chances are? I think you have a good and like, oh man, you're locked. You have nothing to worry about. So the fact that people feel that way, it could be an issue of, you know, being recent and being kind of front of mind for people. There's absolutely the worry that people will, you know, for based on ego or whatever it is, want to take that person out, put a big target on them. So I think that's my big worry going in, is that people might think, you know, Spencer's someone we don't want to get into the, don't want to let get to the end game. And that would be a shame, because I think I would basically, my legacy if that happened would be a pretty disappointing one, of just kind of being a worse version of Rob Cesternino, who, you know, plays decently and then goes out early after being targeted in a returning player season. I think it helps my case over Rob Cesternino that I wasn't as successful strategically. I went far based on, you know, Tony changing his mind a lot and based on some challenge wins, but I never really had my strategy work out for me. So I hope that carries some weight, but I'm prepared for the reality that it might not. One of my biggest hopes is that just someone can steal my thunder, and hopefully Joe can take some of that, you know, some of that target off of me, where he seems to be a really well-liked person from a more recent season. So if he could, you know, get bigger applause than me when we both are announced as being on the cast, if that's the perception, that would be great.
Yeah, well, one thing I've been wondering about is, has any part of you thought that, hey, if I just kind of get to the merge here, I'm already popular enough that I'm probably going to get an invite for a third time if I can just get safely through the beginning of this? Or anything along the lines of, one, if I just do substantially better than Joe, I'm probably going to cement myself as like the golden boy of this era. Has that impacted your thoughts at all?
Not really. I mean, I definitely don't think I can make a claim to be like the golden boy of this era, because even in the best case scenario, I think I'm pretty much on equal footing with Malcolm, who played a great game the first time and played a good game the second time with some really flashy big moments. I don't think I'm in a spot to supersede that or anything. I don't know that I would be guaranteed a third time just by making the merge. But yeah, it definitely enters my mind that, you know, okay, on some level, winning is obviously the biggest priority, but on some level, if it doesn't hurt your chances to win, it would be nice to make a splash and, you know, maybe increase your odds of another chance at it. I try not to think about that too much, and I think when I get out there, I'll pretty much shift to just focusing on the game at hand. It's just really, it's a hard thing to weigh, and it's hard to be, you know, if you see an opportunity to make a big move, you don't want to be blinded by that kind of consideration. You might start to convince yourself, okay, I should go for this big move. It's not going to be bad. It might not hurt my chances to win. And all of a sudden you become like a riskier, you know, less skilled version of Tony Vlachos making big moves for the sake of big moves.
Yeah, you spoke about the fact that you're a lock, and maybe that in other people's minds creates like this sense of entitlement where you don't have to work for it, whereas they have to, you know, put their nose to the grindstone for 2 weeks to make sure they get on. Has anyone tried to leverage that fact in a positive way for themselves by asking you to maybe help them out with the campaign or to show some kind of support for them?
No one's asked me to publicly show support for them. I think people are like really wary of being seen, you know, supporting each other. Like, I think beyond just favoriting tweets that a bunch of different people are tagged in, people have sort of shied away from that kind of thing. So no one has said, look, you're good, so why don't you help me? But yeah, I think people are just really wary of being seen together. Like, I actually went out last night with some of the season 30 people, and it was like Joe and Mike, and I was hanging out in their hotel with them, and I definitely had a big sense of, you know, am I blowing up my spot by being here? Like, it, you know, I walk by like Big Mike and a lot of these super fans who are at a lot of these events, and when I normally friendly, I'm more hesitant to do that. I kind of just, you know, give a courtesy wave and keep my head down and walk by, because I don't want to be seen as the guy who is you know, super schemey, going all over the place, trying to make connections with everyone. And I don't think other people do. And I think that's a big reason why people are generally going to be hesitant to, you know, ask for help. Like, if I saw Joe tweet, you know, hey, everyone should vote for, everyone should vote for Jim Rice. I don't think that bodes that well for Jim Rice as far as how the game plays out.
Yeah, I was thinking more in the context of, like, let's say Tasha feels that she's on the bubble and could use your support, and then it's kind of hard to say no to that, but then...
I'm already friends with who people would expect us to be friendly anyway.
Yeah, possibly.
It would make more sense with Tasha. Tasha's actually been pretty low-key pregame, as far as I know.
Yeah.
So that hasn't actually happened. But that would be more understandable. And I think I don't think anyone is considering that Tasha and I might, you know, not like each other. I think most people assume that Tasha and I have a good chance of being partners. So in that situation, I don't think we would be revealing any bad information by, you know, doing that. But it's like, you know, I think people definitely get paranoid about the perception of pre-gaming too hard. No one wants to be seen as pre-gaming too hard. The people in that situation with One World and Blood vs. Water, when those tweets came out, I think panicked a little bit because it definitely just makes people wary.
Yeah, well, you mentioned no one wants to be seen as the person who's pre-gaming too hard. Who is or who are the people who are being viewed right now among the candidates as the ones kind of trying too hard?
Brad Culpepper.
Okay, not surprising.
Which is actually hilarious because I just think it's funny the idea of Brad Culpepper ruining the game for a lot of people from Blood vs. Water and One World when he isn't actually going to make it.
Yeah.
But that's what's being said. I don't actually have firsthand evidence of that, but, you know, with the tweets of people are being flown out to Brad Culpepper's place, with just – multiple people I've talked to have said, yeah, Brad's calling everyone, Monica's calling people for him. There is definitely a perception that Brad Culpepper is, like, super untrustworthy, super smarmy, pre-gaming too hard.
Yeah, well, I guess it's not really changing much from their perception of him leaving season 27. So.
Yeah, I don't think he ever mentally left season 27. I think he's kind of been on that train the whole time.
Yeah. So I mentioned I had two things I thought were problems. The first was just the overwhelming popularity. The other is, we did the math the other day. If you take you and Joe out of the equation, the average age among the other male candidates is 43.7, and you are two decades younger than that. what's going through your mind as far as how to overcome that? Because, you know, there are going to be plenty of guys out there that literally have children older than you.
Yeah, I mean... frankly, that sucks. I would rather it not be that way. I feel like,
how unlucky can you be?
I mean, it's. I don't think it's as unlucky as people might think, but it's definitely not good. I mean, I would rather have more in common, be more similar walk of life, closer in age to as many people as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, I think that statistic might be a little bit extreme because you're considering all the candidates, and we know that six of those people that you're averaging in aren't going to make it, and that, you know, very likely Joe and I will, which will change that number. But absolutely, it's a big concern. I actually feel much better about most of the women in this group than I do about the guys. There are only a couple guys that I'm really, like, excited to see out there. I don't know how much, like, Terry Dietz is going to like or respect me. So there are a lot of guys that I'm pretty iffy on. And I also feel like with what we were talking about earlier, the concerns about, okay, I'm a recent player who was pretty popular on my season. I think that's something that might bother guys more than girls. I feel like there might be more guys out here with egos who will be eager to nip that in the bud. The average age is definitely a concern, and I think it definitely dictates a lot of my ideas about who I might want to play with.
Yeah, the age thing, I think, I understand why that would be a cause of concern. Equally, though, if you are one of the few young lads out there, if you will, that kind of...
Yeah.
that it kind of means that you're the only one who can really fill that niche. So, you know, if Terry is tired of working with other, like, egotistical men in their 50s, then you're really the only you're the only other option that he has in that regard. So,
yeah.
I don't know. And if you look at a lot of the successful alliances on Survivor, they kind of resemble a family in some respects, where you have, like, an older man, an older woman, and then a few younger people mixed in there.
Size six.
Yeah, so I think you could have sold in there fairly well.
Yeah, the comment I hope about... so. I mean, that's how I'd like to play it. It's I definitely want to, as far as interacting with older people, I want to, as much as possible, fill what they're looking for and be that understudy, you know, to an older guy with a big ego. I want to let them feel like they are shining and that they are admired by me, and hope that, you know, that puts me on good footing with them. So
I think Terry, in particular, could easily see you as Terry Dietz Jr.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, like, when I talk to Terry, I'm talking to Terry about sports. I'm saying, yeah, I was a runner in high school. I did a bit in college. I think Survivor should value the survival skills more. It's a shame that not everyone out here can make a fire like us. When I talk to Terry Dietz, I definitely want to cater my conversation toward that. And if he can see me as, like, a protege of his, then that's fantastic. Like, I think the age thing, I would rather it be level, but there are ways I can play it where it could work out.
Yeah. The comment about feeling more comfortable with the women, I think, I wouldn't say it's surprising, but I would have thought among a lot of the women who are likely to make it, there are a few in there who their natural tendency might be to go after the alpha males as they see it. So, I mean, Cass would be an obvious example. Shireen, I would have thought, preseason, although it seems like you're on good terms with her. PG, potentially. So is that a concern?
When you say, like, go after, you mean target or you mean play with?
Oh, target.
Yeah. No, definitely. And I mean, there are people I've talked to who have that exact thought. So, I mean, that's something I think, like, we'll have to cross those bridges when we come to them. I don't want to go into the game thinking this person's the target, that person's the target. Even Cass, I don't think Cass is necessarily my target. I think Cass might be more likely to be my target. But
I think Cass probably should be in the running here.
But all I'm saying is that there easily could arise a scenario where this isn't my target. There easily could be a tribe makeup where there's a bigger issue and there's specific reason not to go after Cass. But yeah, absolutely, if I were to pick one person who's the most likely to be my target, it is Cass. And I would, if I could like trade being eligible for the first few immunities to just have Cass out of this thing, I would do it. Things would be a lot better and simpler without her.
I think
I was gonna say, although now that I say that, you might have actually neutralized that concern quite well, because if you've got this thing going with Shireen, then maybe that removes yourself from her radar. And then if Cass was always going to be a question mark anyway, and then Tasha, you seem to be on good terms with, so the people who are most likely to have that attitude, I think you already at least know where they stand.
It could be.
I just don't, like, see how is any tribe going to let Cass get through the first round?
I completely agree. I hope that people see it that way, where she really is the worst type of person you would want to align with. She's proven herself to not be trustworthy, not even trustworthy to follow her own best interests, and not helpful in challenges or in camp. Like, I really don't think there are many positives. So I just have to hope that people see it the way I do, and that when it comes down to it, if there's a situation where it's me against her, that people look at the facts and look at the fact that I can be a better ally to them.
Yeah. I mean, especially when she's just campaigning on the platform of, put me back out there so I can go fuck everything up again. You know she's going to do it because she doesn't
care. Of course. I mean, like, you would be incredibly foolish to think you can trust Cass and to think she's a good person to work with. She went on RHAP and talked about, you know, I don't want to cause chaos. I just want to, you know, I want to be trustworthy this time. And all you have to do is look at her video where she's trying to elicit votes that completely contradicts everything she just said, to realize that she is saying what she thinks she needs to say for the situation, and nothing she says should be taken seriously.
Yeah. Well, beyond just Cass, Who else are you really just hoping is not out there, as far as – not on a personal level necessarily, but just in, yeah, as far as it impacts
just
your game?
Just for, like, my chances of doing well.
Right.
Let's see. I mean, I would probably root for Max to not be out there. Based on a few things. Based on we're in a similar category, I think people could easily group us together. And especially with Shireen in the mix as well, like seeing what happened to Shireen and Max and how they were kind of ostracized and seen as the annoying Survivor fans, I definitely don't want to be lumped in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a fair answer.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't really have too many people. I guess, like, I almost feel like someone like Brad Culpepper that I know I will not work with, I almost would be okay with him making it because I feel like he's just such an easy target. Mm-hmm.
How about Vitas? What's your thoughts on him at the moment?
Yeah, it's tough because, I mean, Vitas, I guess if you were to say, like, would I rather him make it or rather him not, I probably would rather him not. Because I think, first of all, I think he's a very threatening player. I think he's a pretty strong player. But beyond that, like, I trust Vitas, and we've talked. We've texted intermittently. We've talked on the phone a few times. But I trust Vitas 0.0%, as Jeff Probst would say. He is, to me, like, the least trustworthy person. When I look at it, it's like, I don't
know. All right, so apologies for the abrupt ending there. We are back with Spencer. He is currently in the Sequester Hotel. It is Wednesday, May the 20th on the East Coast, and in less than 24 hours, the Season 31 cast will be in lockdown on their way to Cambodia. So we are literally at the 11th hour here. And Spencer has very kindly joined us in those last few moments to wrap up our conversation from earlier.
Yeah, why not? 11th hour, whatever hour it is. I'm all for it. Yeah, it was sorry for the abrupt ending.
Yeah, no problem at all. And when we last left off, you were talking about how you have 0.0% trust in Vitas, which I, for one, feel is a very fair amount of trust to be having in Vitas. So I don't know if you need to elaborate any more on that.
Colin, let me just tell you this. Like, he said there. This is a direct quote from him. Look, man, I just want to go out there, and I don't care about the $1 million. I don't care about winning. I just want to make great friends and have the time of my life. I mean, that was all I needed to hear. I was like, okay, guy.
You'd think he would embrace that, right? Wouldn't he kind of be aware that people would recognize the kind of player he is? And or at least I would feel like in his position, that would be my idea, right?
I don't know. Like, I'm not sure he is that self-aware, really. I mean, I think there's some element of thinking people buy his bullshit more than they do.
I'm sure in life he probably just gets away with murder. So it probably is helpful. Yeah, sorry, Tom, were you saying something?
Do you think that's part of him that kind of actually believes that in a coach-esque sort of way?
I don't. I think Vitas is self-aware in the respect of being honest with himself and knowing what he actually thinks and what he's saying. Where I think it falls short is when it comes to his reads on other people. So maybe, like, the self-awareness is there, but just, like, the awareness of perceptions might not be.
Yeah, and I have to imagine that's the general vibe among the other candidates as well, that Vitas is super sketchy and not to be trusted.
Yeah, I think it absolutely is. I mean, like, from the limited number of people I've spoken with, that's definitely the thing I've heard. I mean, if there's one word that I've heard more than any other with it, it's smarmy.
Yeah. For people listening at home wondering, Spencer is now in his, as we mentioned, his sequester hotel room. Understandably, want to keep his voice down, so that's why he's more whispering than normal. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I don't think there's any worry. I just would, you know, I feel better, like, not screaming on the phone.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, that's what I think about Vitas. I think he will be out there. I think he's got a really good shot. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I just can't imagine anyone, maybe not anyone, but most people that are among these candidates watching his season to take notes on Vetus, not coming away with the conclusion that he's not to be trusted.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. I think it depends on if you focus on his gameplay versus his edit or his, you know, his story arc. I think that, you know, people like you or me definitely watch the show with strategy being front of mind. And I think we come away with that conclusion. But there's this whole other side to it that is a redemption story and, you know, a guy who got things together after addiction. So I think people who maybe watch a little more casually and who for whom that is their main takeaway and not the calculated manipulation that he was doing, you know, when he was on the bottom of the swap tribe and all that stuff, I think there probably are some people out there who have a different impression of him.
And I have to imagine when he was out there giving those confessionals about how he was using his backstory to manipulate people and so on, I think he imagined that that would increase his profile as a returnee when they were casting for an All-Star season, but maybe sure. Not realizing that he was also just sinking his chances in that season when he did a return. Because, you know, if this is a general idea, I can't imagine it going very well for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, it's. I mean, Survivor is so high variance that it's really hard to say, but I think he would prefer to have a different image going in than he has.
Yeah, I think it would be smart to prefer a different image, but what can you do? Sure. So just to kind of go back to something in a little more general terms, what have you been doing in the way of preparation? What did you do, I guess, at this point in the way of preparation? I know you went into this a little bit on RHAP, but as far as, you know, starving, not starving, I guess you said you put on weight, but just other things along those lines.
Yeah, I mean, I did put on weight, but unfortunately, I have a pretty fast metabolism, and before all of this, I was 150, around there. I gained 10 pounds to get to 160, and I weighed myself this morning, and I was 153, which was pretty disappointing. Yeah. So I think just like the last week or two, I kind of stopped eating a ton because I wanted to ease into eating fewer calories, and I've already kind of lost it back, so I've given up on that. But I think from a fitness standpoint, I definitely think the cardio is more important than like weight training. So I've been doing some lifting, but I've been trying to do more running and swimming.
Yeah.
And then I also seeked out an Eagle Scout to really hammer down getting good at making fire with flint and steel. It's something that I was capable of the first time, but not in any way, shape, or form proficient at. And I definitely wanted to have that more solid this time, not because it's necessarily a make or break, but because it's just like an obvious thing. There's no downside to having that ability. So I now feel a lot more confident with it.
How would you compare how prepared you feel entering this second time compared to the first time?
I would say pretty close to the same. I think I know what I'm doing more preparing this time. I have more focus, but I've also had less time. The last time I did it, I went to finals casting and had a good idea that I would be on Survivor almost half a year before I went on Survivor. So I had a ton of time. And so even with less know-how, I think I had a lot of time to really get in great shape, or at least for me, great shape. This time I've really been working at it for like 6 weeks. So it's been a much more abbreviated prep. But I mean, I think there's also the mental element where knowing what to expect goes a long way. So I feel better in that respect.
Yeah.
And in that regard, have you sought out people who have played on seasons featuring routinees just to ask them how the game differs fundamentally from your first time out there?
So I've kicked the brain of a few people. I reached out to like Cochran, who initially I thought I was going to talk to, but ultimately didn't really hear back from. And he's gone Hollywood on me. I talked to Sestrinino briefly, you know, just like before and after the podcast, and he was always helpful. I mean, we didn't talk at length or anything, but he's definitely like a good guy to just kind of hear your thoughts mirrored back, you know, to bounce things off of. Other than that, not really. I've talked to people who are in this mix who have talked to people. So I've sort of gotten some indirect tidbits. I mean, Steven definitely has talked to Tyson extensively and others. John Cochran actually did talk to Steven. So I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I'll have to figure it out. But I was able to get some stuff kind of through the grapevine of just, how things changed. But yeah, not too much actually firsthand.
Okay. I know you're obviously, you take pride in being a super fan and things like that. And you've seen all the seasons presumably a couple of times. Did you rewatch anything in anticipation for this? And how much value do you think there even is in gauging people off of what you saw from them their first time?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, one big thing that changed is going into the first time I played Survivor, I thought rewatching would be really crucial. I thought it would be, important to have the best gauge on a strategy I could. And I came to realize that I was vastly overestimating the importance of knowing what to do and vastly underestimating the importance of being able to do it.
Talk to Garrett at all, by chance?
right. Yeah, I put in my 2,000 hours to no avail. Basically, I came away from that feeling as if it's just so much more important to be self-aware and have a good idea of how you're going to interact with people and work socially in order to set moves up than it is to be familiar with exactly the nuts and bolts of how Suri pulled off a big blindside at the final six in Exile Island. So I didn't do much rewatching this time. I think it's been more important to, be checking in with being friendly with some of the people in the mix and, preparing mentally and physically. I think that'll serve me better than rewatching every season of Survivor.
Yeah, because you can have a crystal clear memory of how someone played the first time round, but that might not say anything about how they're going to play on a second season 10 years later when maybe they've changed and the circumstances have changed and so on.
Yeah,
and also,
absolutely, we keep talking over each other, but I was just going to say, on that point that I do think it helps to have sort of a working knowledge of how people played before, in so much as it allows you to talk to them about their experience. And, people, especially reality TV contestants, love that. So I feel good about being familiar with everyone's seasons. But as you said, I don't think it's that helpful in predicting what they're going to be this time.
Yeah. And also, it feels like a lot of that is specific to the context of that season. And, coming out here for a second time, you might have a different understanding of them. So I think Shireen, fittingly, is maybe a perfect example where, on this season, people find her annoying, people don't admire her fandom. But on this season, you have a lot of fans, and you have a lot of other people who have been seen as abrasive or annoying and who can maybe either empathize or take that target away from her. So it seems like she is in a very good position going in.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that is true. And I also think, in a returning player season, that kind of thing probably carries less weight. I don't think the mentality of, a Jen Brown who wants to vote you out because you're annoying and because you're talking to her about Survivor is going to be pervasive here. I think it's going to be much more about trust and relationships. And so I think that suits her well also. I also think that you always have to take things with a grain of salt, and I don't know how annoying she was perceived to be. She definitely was to some extent, but there was a lot of complications, definitely with Max in there. How culpable was Shireen and how was Max? So I think, she also has, hopefully, really for both of our sakes, hopefully there's the benefit that Max won't be, guilting her by any association.
How do you think you and your circumstances have changed since the first time you played? Because it's only been about a year and a half, if I'm getting the time right there. But at our age, that seems like a fairly significant length of time.
Yeah, it's been from filming to filming, it's about 2 years. So it's not a huge amount of time, but I do think it's probably a more substantial jump 2 years for me than 2 years would be for someone who's older. 2021 versus 23, I think, is probably a bigger jump than, you know, 40 versus 42. So, you know, since the first time I've finished college, I am about to start a job. And I think I have also had the opportunity, you know, at a time in my life when people normally kind of figure out who they are and might do some introspection, I've had Survivor to like coincide with that. And I think Survivor is an opportunity for really intense introspection. So I think I've probably had the chance to evolve a bit as a person, maybe more in 2 years based on my youth and lack of experience than someone who's older.
Plus you've learned all of those life lessons from Gilmore Girls. So
true. I mean, Colin, Gilmore Girls is an emotional journey. It's a spiritual journey.
I'm sure it is.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm excited for a more emotionally aware Spencer.
Okay. I'm sure everyone is. Let's venture down into like hypothetical land here, and let's start in the darkest timeline. Have you mentally mm-hmm. prepared for the idea of possibly being an early boot this season?
Nope.
Not at all. Is there anything that you think that you right now, if that were to happen, would want to keep in mind down the line come December? Anything that, you know, current Spencer, before all of this plays out, at least hypothetically? And of course, God forbid that this ever happens.
Sure.
But is there anything that you would want to remind yourself of when you listen back to this potentially?
You know, honestly, no. I'm sure, you know, in a scenario where that happened, I would look back and be like, I do kind of wonder what my attitude was. But I'm really big, you know, like John Mish always says, I'm really big on visualizing the win. And that was sarcastic. but I truly, like, not sarcastically, I am big on envisioning how I want things to go. And of course, you know, you should be prepared for the worst, but I don't think there's that much I can do right now to prepare where, you know, really the problems that would arise from the, you know, being upset at being an early boot would be emotional things and bridges that I think I would cross when I come to them. But as far as my preparation, as far as my mentality, I definitely want to think positive and want to plan on the scenarios of doing well.
Okay, well, let's do that then. Are you mentally prepared for the idea of winning? Do you feel like you have any idea of how you could even respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's hard because it's like I guess I'm prepared where I can imagine what it would be like. But I imagine if I win, there would be a ton of emotions that would hit me that I wouldn't be ready for. And again, I would have to kind of deal with that as it comes. So, you know, I don't want to be cocky and only plan on the good, but I do want to, you know, really like hope for the good and, you know, see it happening. Cause I think the more you're looking for it to happen, the more optimistic you can be. I think that's generally going to be a helpful thing. I think you're going to be looking out for opportunities to make it happen in a more constructive way.
Yeah. How good do you think your chances are of winning?
I think that, you know, I would imagine my placement is a pretty high variance one where, you know, I think you guys bring up some valid points that, based on being pretty recent, and pretty front of mind for people, I could definitely be targeted early. But I do think that, you know, if the stars align and if I can get, you know, in the right group, if I can end up in the right, you know, final three scenario, I definitely think I have some solid winning chances. So I would say my odds of winning are a bit better than 1 in 20, which I guess is the average odds of someone on the season winning. But, you know, perhaps my odds of being an early boot are also a bit higher than 1 in 20, or my odds of being the first boot are maybe higher than 1 in 20. I think, you know, I don't know if I have great odds of going far, but I do think I have as good odds as I can hope for of winning.
And if you were one of the unlucky cuts, tomorrow night and you were able to look at it more objectively, who would you think has the best shot other than you? So is there anyone who you think is maybe a dark horse or someone who people aren't giving enough credit to at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't see myself as the best player in the mix. So I don't know that this answer would be different, but I think, you know, taking myself out of the equation, I think Steven set up fantastically to do well. I think Steven worries that he might be targeted based on a perception that he's super connected based on being, you know, on RHAP and being the know-it-alls, but I think there's also a lot of upside to his situation going into the game where he, you know, if he's perceived that way, perhaps he's someone people want to talk to. It could probably help him and help make inroads as much as it could, you know, make him threatening and someone people want to get rid of. So I think he's in a decent situation going into the game. And I think just strategically, he has a really good grasp and is one of the best thinkers out there. I think Tasha is in a good shape. I could see her, you know, making a big run. I mean, well, Colin, was your winner pick like Kelly Wigglesworth or Kelly Wentworth or something?
I have gone, I initially picked her as someone high on my radar. I think at last we checked, it was T-Bird, but it's very subject to change.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think like they both definitely have pretty solid chances, really likable.
Yeah.
Honestly, like in this group, anyone likable with a firm grasp of strategy is in pretty good shape. But yeah, there's some people with really solid chances. I think like, Kelly, T-Bird, Tasha, Steven, yeah, all those people definitely have good chances.
And conversely, I guess then, other people, other than the obvious ones who you think are just dead in the water, one name that I have questions about would be Jeremy, who, you know, I think displays some kind of capability on his season, but it seems like he isn't dialed into the pre-game machinations at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to say for sure, because, I mean, of course Jeremy could be doing things that I don't know about. I probably know about a very small percentage of what's going on. As with pretty much anyone in Survivor before or during the game. But yeah, Jeremy, based on, you know, what I know of him from his season, I don't see any reason he couldn't make a big run at it either. And I don't think that taking pregame lightly, if that is what he's doing, is such a negative. I think it's definitely better to be underplaying things right now than it is to be overplaying things. I think there are probably people who, based on overplaying things, have really hurt themselves, and I don't think that many people have killed their chances by taking it easy. You know, despite, you know, all the conspiracy theorists and people who say that pregame alliances win the day, and Cochran planned out his victory before the game even started, they work sometimes and they don't other times, and all the time people are very successful without them.
Okay, and going back to the original question, are there any people in particular who you think are going to have a tough time of it? Or, I mean, I guess it's tough to say at this stage.
Oh, yeah, sure. I don't think Cass can win.
other than the obvious, I said.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to surprise anyone that I think that. But if Cass wins, I will be floored. Let's see, I can't imagine Brad Culpepper winning.
Can I ask you about Monica Padilla? What's the vibe on her?
I don't know her that well. I think she could plausibly win. I mean, if she makes it, I don't know that she's going to make it. But if she's there, she seems savvy enough. She seems pretty likable. I would probably put her top half as far as people who are likely to win.
Okay, and one other thing. Did you hear Kelly Wigglesworth on RHAP?
No, I didn't, but I know that it was only 15 minutes long.
Yeah, and well, in it, she basically talks about how she's not interested in being in an alliance, and Rob almost kind of tries to talk her into the idea of, hey, you know, that's basically how the game is played these days.
Oh my gosh.
And she essentially said, hey, I'm going to show everyone that you can win without an alliance.
That's fascinating. She and Cass can show the world.
Yeah, well, I was going to see, because it seems great, like, that seems like such a rare type of player, especially in an all-star season, that I was wondering how you would respond to that if she was out there on your team.
No, totally. I mean, that's really interesting, because it's like, I kind of knew that Kelly Wigglesworth didn't keep up with the show and that she has been like living in Mexico or something off the grid. So it doesn't surprise me that she's kind of like a season one contestant in a time capsule that just came out in 2015 and is about to play again. But I think that's fascinating. I mean, I think that would be a really interesting wrinkle. Actually, it would be pretty refreshing because I think everyone, I mean, that attitude, even though it was very common in the early stages of the show, is like seeing a unicorn right now. So as far as how I would approach it, I guess I would try and just be very friendly. And if her criteria for voting is, I guess, you know, who's helpful or who's likable or who can help win challenges, whatever it is, I'll try and cater to it. And if there's any way that, you know, I could make her intentions align with one of an alliance, even if she's not in an alliance, then that would be good too.
Yeah, it seems like she's going to be a very important piece of the puzzle because, like, you know that when the game gets down to the late stages, everyone will be coming for your head. And if there's just one person in there who doesn't have that as their priority, even if they're not in an alliance with you, you know, that's a valuable bit of breathing space to have.
Yeah, I mean, there are probably situations where just not being out to get me would almost be like an alliance member. Like in my,
right.
You know, in Kageyan, there were certainly points where it felt like if you're not actively gunning for me, then you're basically a friend, as close as I have to a friend.
Right. Like Mike right now in the current season is voting, like Mike and Carolyn during the last episode where Dan got voted out. Like Shireen with the no collars almost.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. Wouldn't it be crazy if she's pulling one over on everyone and is saying this strategically?
I call on that. I do not see that being the case.
I mean, are you mentally prepared, I guess, for maybe having to undergo that same experience again where you're kind of forced into the underdog role, you don't really have too much agency over what happens, and it's just kind of trying to fight your way out of a paper bag, basically?
Yeah, I mean, I hope that doesn't happen. But yeah, I think I am pretty prepared for it just based on, you know, having experience.
Yeah, speaking of prepared through experience, just quickly.
So, one second.
Oh, sorry. Yep.
Oh, never mind. I thought someone was knocking on my door. They're not.
No, it was a dumb question anyway, so.
I was going to ask you guys, I don't know if you were about to get to this, but were you going to ask about people's odds of getting on? I would love to talk through
who we think might get on.
Okay, because I think it's interesting, and it's really the biggest thing for me is trying to predict how the casual fans will factor into this. Like, there are pretty clear objective polls that we can extrapolate from like Survivor Socks and Reddit and other places, RHAP. But then, you know, you see on Twitter like the other day that 10 million ballots were apparently cast.
Yeah.
Which clearly extends beyond those groups.
There's no way, right? Is that possible?
Yeah, I mean, it seems really unlikely.
Voter fraud, one time.
We're currently hoping that it's Jim Rice just like buying an Indian call center or something to vote every single day.
I mean, I did see on Reddit, like, Jim Rice has been like advertising in medical marijuana magazines saying like get discounts on weed to vote for me on Survivor.
A lot of things people will do for discounted weed.
It's a crazy world we live in. Jim Rice is offering people weed. Monica Padilla is running in her bikini on Sunset Boulevard.
We'll start with those two then. How likely do you think it is that Jim's out there and Monica's out there?
I think Jim is absolutely not out there, and I think Monica is more likely than not out there. I didn't phrase that well at all. I think she's most likely not.
Do the people who are in the midst of this process at the moment, how much of a better idea do you have than we, the public, do of who might get on and who might not?
I don't think I have any better idea. I think I'm working with pretty much the same info you guys are. If anything, I would imagine you guys might have a better idea because you might be more plugged in to, you know, how impactful recency bias might be with your knowledge of, you know, how Big Brother 7 went.
Very heavily recency biased.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's going to be a huge make or break is does recency bias carry the day? I ranked everyone as far as how likely I think they are.
Oh, let's hear it.
I'll read you my list and tell me what you think. So for the women, I think from most likely to least likely to make it, I have Shireen, Cass, Sierra, Tasha, Abby, Carolyn, T-Bird, Kelly Wigglesworth, Sabrina Thompson, Kelly Wentworth, PG, and PG would have, in this scenario, PG would be the first person who does not make it. Stephanie Valencia, Natalie Tenorelli, Monica, Kimmy, Michaela. Do you want to pick that apart before we go to the guys?
I would say yes. Sabrina sounds high to me and PG sounds low to me.
I was going to say Sabrina sounds high and Kelly Wentworth sounds low, but as you say, it all comes back to this question of what proportion of the vote, if it is real, is casuals voting, because if they make up the overwhelming majority, then recency bias is just going to overwhelm everything else,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And if that happens, then yeah, you're very right about Kelly Wentworth being low. I hope that you guys are right. That would be fantastic. I think, like, for me, if Wentworth and PG were both, you know, underestimated in my ranking and are more likely to make it.
The other thing that stood out to me, as you know, as much of an advocate as I've been for her, is Carolyn, from what I've seen, was not exit polling that well. Although maybe that's changed in these last couple of days since the new episode, or I guess this last week since the new episode.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I noticed that as well. In, you know, RHAP, she finished very low. I think with her, I just figure if recency bias is at all a factor, she's the biggest beneficiary. And you also have to keep in mind, if things get really close, that polling is open up until 1 hour into the finale. So I'm guessing, you know, it's possible to start the finale, they'll even mention it. And then we have Carolyn on TV as voting closes. She could rack up a ton of votes in that last hour.
Yeah, I bet you, if they mention that you can still vote for the first hour, I bet you, regardless of whether or not it's true, they say that the last hour changed the vote.
Yeah, that's another interesting thing, is how much will Jeff comment on the dynamics of the vote? If he says, like, and now the, like, top vote getter, Joe, like, Joe's not going to be happy about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, talk to whatever producers you can about not being the first one introduced as part of the cast.
That would be terrible. I mean, yeah, and I hope I can get as little applause as possible. I just want to not stand out, you know. I don't want to be a focal point at all, and I would love for someone else to be a focal point.
Yeah, I think you're very much correct in wanting that. I am pessimistic that will be the case, unfortunately.
Do you think that they're likely to say, like, the top vote getter is this person? Because I feel like they probably won't go that far. I think the biggest realistic concern is just, like, applause.
Yeah.
I think the order that they do it in would be significant, because they wouldn't want the last people to be announced to be like you and Joe, for instance, who everyone knows is getting in. Mm-hmm. So I think they would get that out of the way at the start. But given that everyone kind of knows that already, I don't think that would hurt things too much.
Yeah, for me, it's...
Do you think everyone knows? I mean, talking about the casuals, the 10 million viewers of Survivor, do you think everyone has the attitude that they know Joe and I are going to be back?
That it's so tough to put yourself in their shoes.
I think let's keep in mind
that these are people who post, like, can't wait to see Rupert back for the fifth time. Oh man, like, it's been a while since we saw that guy from Texas on. What was his name? Cobby? Like, I don't know how aware of the voting and the polling any of these people are.
See,
and I think they're gonna cater it to those people, right? So if they believe that those people don't think that I'm a lock, they could definitely announce me last.
Yeah, because my concern is, if it is just a massive sea of casual fans voting, then they might have a few people who stick in their mind that they do want to vote for. But beyond that, it's, do I have any strong objections to this person? Do I even remember them? If not, then maybe I just randomly put a vote towards them or something. And so... for instance, I was thinking, mm-hmm. who, you know, for the internet fan base would be a mortal lock. You know, I think a lot of casual fans either won't remember Cass or will remember Cass and actively dislike her and therefore not cast a vote towards her. Mm-hmm. And so she might be in greater trouble than any of us were expecting.
I think that's a really strong point. I mean, I'm still 100% predicting that Cass makes it, but I think in my mind, her odds went from 100% to maybe 95%, because the format is more about who you dislike than it is about who you do like.
Yeah.
The format absolutely penalizes polarizing people. You know, you're choosing six people to leave off your ballot. You're not choosing 10 people to put on your ballot. So it goes from all those people with strong opinions about Cass, you know, if it had been a thing of you pick your favorite, then Cass is absolutely guaranteed because there are a lot of people whose favorite is Cass. But there are also a lot of people whose least favorite is Cass. So that definitely hurts her.
Yeah. I think, I would be very concerned about being the first one announced. I think it's going to come down. I think one of you, Joe or Shireen, will be the first one that they announce as part of the cast.
It might be Joe and Shireen, given that they just came off this most recent season.
Yeah.
As just a way of bookending that. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so I mean, I would at least, in your spot, I would be thrilled as long as I'm not literally just the first person. Much like, job well done on this, by the way, when you were doing RHAP, just don't be the last one.
yeah, thanks.
Yeah, no, it was very good, though. It was good.
No, it's...
And I don't think it was a big deal at all.
I think I definitely overthought it. Like, I don't know that my RHAP interview went particularly great. Like, and one of the reasons I took so long is just, like, I wasn't really sure how I was going to put things. Like, there's this huge worry of mine with Cass that I knew, you know, I was going to be asked about her. And there's a very, very real perception from some of these people that Cass and I are secretly best friends. And that we're going to work together behind closed doors, which is untrue. And it's infuriatingly hard to prove that it's untrue. Because whenever we like tweet something hateful toward each other, people just say, oh, they're keeping up the act. Whenever we're nice to each other, people say, oh, they like each other. It's lose-lose. And I feel like talking about it is lose-lose. But, you know... I think people, especially me, probably overthink these things. I hope and I think that the interviews won't carry that much weight as long as you don't truly put your foot in your mouth.
Yeah.
Thinking about this male lineup then, who do you have at the top and the bottom of that?
Okay, I'm going to say, most likely to least likely, I have Joe, me, Jeremy, Keith, Vetus, Steven, Wu, Troy Zan, Shane, Jeff Varner, and then the first person I have not making it is Savage, and then I have Max, and then I have Terry Dietz, and then Jim Rice, and then Culpepper.
Terry seems low to me. I kept waiting for you to say Terry early on.
So who do you think he should be over? You think he's just very clearly over, like, Varner and Savage and Shane?
I think Troy's on, because... We talk about recency bias, but I think that only goes back for like a year or two at this point. And beyond that, you really have to make a strong impression to stick in people's minds. And I don't know that there are many people out there saying, okay, Troy Zan was the beacon of light in One World, and I really want to see him back.
Yeah. I mean, Troy Zan definitely, particularly amongst the internet groups, is not getting a lot of love, I feel like. But I don't know. It's like, it's... being in touch with casuals is so hard, and I have little to go off of. One thing I do know is my girlfriend's family is what I consider the typical casual fans. They don't really remember many people, but they watch every episode, and I feel like they enjoy the show. They turn it off right when it's done. They don't think that much about it. They all adore Troy Zan. They love Troy Zan unanimously. And they remember him. And they don't remember a lot of these people. They don't remember Kelly Wentworth, who was last year. They don't remember Steven at all. So I don't know. That's clearly not a good sample size, but I can imagine that there are some casual fans like them out there that could give Troy Zan a big bump.
How psyched were they when she brought you over for the first time?
I don't know, we got along well. They think the show is a really cool thing, and
yeah.
I definitely think it's a good thing to talk about. So it's a big plus. Yeah, I mean, I do think like a big constituency where I am more liked is the casual fans compared to super fans. Not that super fans really hate me, but I think the average casual probably likes me more than the average super fan.
Yeah. Going just quickly back through your list of men, I guess what, like, Wu to me just stood out originally as the guy I thought for sure had the worst chance of making it. But I guess if it is this many ballots actually being cast or anything even close to that, Wu, yeah, just by virtue of having played on a season with you and Tony, yeah, and Cass, I suppose, is going to be back out there in all likelihood.
I mean, I hate to – I'm sounding more and more like Jeff Probst, and I hate that because he's always talking about the people on the street and, oh, I heard this, and I'm bringing up like my girlfriend's family, and now I'm about to do another like people on the street-like thing. But I do remember at our finale, Wu was incredibly popular, and he got like some of the biggest rounds of applause. So, I mean, if that's any gauge, Wu has a lot of popularity that people might not see coming.
What's your status with Wu at the moment?
It's pretty undefined. Wu and I talked very briefly over text where I just mentioned, oh, this is really, you know, generic stuff. This is really exciting. Being in the mix to come back, that's awesome, man. And he said something along the lines of just a vague, like, pregame thing, like, hey, man, yeah, I feel the same way. I'll never forget who I played this game with first.
That's not bad for Wu.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that we're on decent terms. I think there could be a lot of value in allying with Wu at some point, especially if he's still loyal to a fault.
Yeah. If he's still handing away millions of dollars, you sign me up.
But yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't blame Wu at all for resenting me. I mean, I was basically a dick to him at Final Tribal Council. So I wouldn't blame him at all for really like not liking me / wanting to put me in my place after that. But he's a good dude and he's a forgiving guy. So I am optimistic that we're on decent terms.
That's cool. So I guess just in general, I guess it really stood out more on the male side of the ballot than the females. You're buying that the casuals are going to have a big say over this, I guess, if it comes down to it?
I mean, I don't know that my ranking suggests that it's going to be bigger for males. I think the women I had not making it are PG, Stephanie Valencia, Natalie, Monica, Kimmy, and Michaela.
Okay. So Michaela
would be the most recent.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, there's also an element of this where I think like I made these rankings while kind of planning, you know, how things might shake out. You know, basically I took the people who would be making it in this scenario and I charted out like who I think might work with who. And so I definitely, there was a part of me that said, okay, let's have Kelly Wentworth make it and PG not, just so that it's kind of like an average scenario for me where I want them both to. So let's assume like a median scenario where one does and one doesn't. And I did the same with Varner and Savage that I want both of them to make it. So the rankings are definitely not a hard science.
On the same principle, for why we thought Cass might be in danger, do you think Stephen is actually as big a log as he's assumed to be? Because again, if it's all casuals all the time, I don't know how many of them are going to be really going to bat for Stephen.
Very, very fair point. I mean, RHAP is a huge group. I could easily see, you know, 20,000 RHAP people voting for this every day.
Yeah.
And 10 days, that's already 200,000, which is 1/5 of the vote. And I believe 97% of RHAP people voted for Steven. So RHAP could be huge. Whereas,
isn't it 5% of the vote if it's 10 million?
Oh, yeah. Wow. it's 5%, my bad.
No, it's fine. Yeah, it's a slight difference.
But that, like,
yeah, actually,
really
no, it's sorry,
like,
it's 2%. It's not 5%. It's 200,000 out of out of 10 just, million.
Oh, right, yeah.
Super fans can't do basic math.
Yeah, seriously. 2%. This just keeps getting worse and worse for Steven.
Oh my God. Yeah, that was really bad, especially given I'm going to be starting a job in proprietary trading soon. That's awful.
But yeah, I mean, even if we factor in 200,000 ballots from RHAP people, that would still only be 2% of this election.
Yeah, that's 2%. Yeah. I was wrong. I don't disagree with you. I really don't. So yeah, never mind. So yeah, I think there's definitely a situation where Stephen might not make it.
Yeah, that would be tragic.
I don't know. I don't know what else I can say. I mean, I guess it helps him that I do think that, you know, the people from season 12 and earlier, and then like Max and Culpepper and Jim Rice, are still people I definitely see Stephen beating. But would I be floored if Stephen didn't make it? No.
Yeah, I think at this point neither would I. Like, Reddit can love, you know, as much as Reddit can want him to be like the third high. I forget how he's polling over there. But quite highly. That does not a sizable percentage of the vote make.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'd still hold that RHAP is a bigger constituency than Reddit or Survivor Sucks. But
as far as actively getting out there and voting.
Yeah, but you're right. Casuals might easily be the make or break, which is a scary prospect for Steven.
Just the more I think about it, there is no way that RHAP is only 2% of the voting people.
See, that comes back to the question about this 10 million number.
Right.
I really don't know about that. I really don't.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's so strange because, like, the show gets less than 10 million viewers every week, and that's Nielsen rating, so you have people watching online or on DVR or whatever, but you're looking at maybe 13 to 15 million, and that's an optimistic estimate. The idea that there's 10 million ballots cast based on that just seems so like stunningly large to me. Like, how are they even getting that?
It really does. I mean, yeah, of course it's like, I mean, you know this, but it is 10 million ballots and not 10 million people. Which I don't know what that would come out to, but probably like, I don't know, 1.5-2 million people. But yeah, I agree. It's stunningly large. It's larger than I could ever have predicted it would have been.
I mean, Dom and I do a Survivor podcast, and neither of us could be bothered to vote.
That says more about us, I think, than anything else. But
I look, people who say every vote counts, and this goes for politics too. I don't mind having this controversial opinion. People who say every vote counts are fucking idiots.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
Every vote does not count. I don't vote in elections because my vote does not count, and I didn't vote in this because my vote does not count. The chance that it comes down to one vote or 10 votes or whatever, however many I would have cast, is approximately zero.
Yeah. They're not even advertising it, though, as far as I can tell. Like, they didn't have it as a lead-in to last week's Survivor episode, and as far as I know, it hasn't been circulating during the week either. So I'm not sure where people are even being made aware of this if they didn't pay attention to
the first time. Yeah, I mean, as far as casuals, it was that 30-second blurb at the end of the episode 2 weeks ago. That's it.
Yeah, I feel like if there are honestly 10 million different accounts that have voted, voter fraud has to be highly likely.
Yeah,
right?
How could it be anything else? Could be going on?
I mean, it doesn't seem hard to.
I could see Brad Culpepper hiring, like, going to Silicon Valley and looking for the nerdiest looking guy he sees and walking up to him and being like, hey, I need you to write an algorithm. Get me some votes, okay?
Or just like Shireen walking next door in her office and just like, hey, can anyone help me out with this?
Yeah.
How dare you? Shireen wouldn't do that.
She just has every registered
Yahoo
account.
Yeah,
voting for
her. That's a good point as well. Shireen does not need to do that.
Yeah, true.
Culpepper does. I half expected Culpepper to buy ad space in like the New York Times, like bribe people. Andrew Savage kind of made a big move by he's got some ads that come up on CBS.
It's kind of shocking to me that Brad is even in the mix for this, given the whole legal scandal that's surrounding him. Like, firstly, that they would put him on the ballot at all, and secondly, that he would accept, given what's going on.
The Jeff Probst man crush is a powerful thing, Dom.
Yeah.
I guess so. So, one question I had was, you've spoken about the people that you feel good about yourself and this kind of alliance that maybe does seem to be in place. Is there some kind of, like, opposition force or some opposing alliance that you think could be springing up and that you have to be paying attention to?
Yeah, I mean, so the way I see it, I'll just lay it out. the way I see it, I feel I'm going to talk especially quietly right now. I feel good about Shireen, Tasha, Steven, Kelly Wentworth, PG, Savage, Varner, Carolyn. And some of those people are through people that I listed, not necessarily people I personally have talked to, but those are all people that I feel good about. And I feel like perhaps Joe. I feel like Joe could be a good person. We've had some like decent interactions.
Okay.
And I think Wu, I would also put in that group of someone that, you know, I hope for the best and I could see it working out. I think there is a constituency that I am not really attached to. That is Troy's and the One World people, Sabrina, you know, Sierra, Vetus, and then through Vetus, who has a connection to Aris, Terry and Shane from Aris' season. So I think that's a decent sized, like a 6-person group that, could definitely be, you know, a block. And then I think we have a few people that could go anywhere. I think, you know, Keith and Jeremy, as far as I can tell, have been pretty low key. So I don't know where they would fit in. Wigglesworth obviously is low key. I don't know where she would fit in. T-Bird, I like. We had a very nice, very vague Twitter DM. But I don't know what she's up to. And then Cass, I am not really sure what she's up to. I've heard from some people that she is calling a lot of people. But I, you know, hopefully she is not, you know, getting together some huge block of 15 people that are going to crush me. Yeah, that's kind of how I see things. I think there is that kind of like 6-ish person group that could be a little worrisome.
Yeah. I recall Cass and Abby being fairly close based on my social media stuff, but.
Oh, really? Well, I mean, yeah. I know that Abby's like pretty big on going to the finales and befriending people she thinks might go back. And I do know that she hung out with Cass at our finale and that she, and Tony as well, which Tony, that didn't amount to anything, but, that makes sense.
That would be the greatest alliance of all time. Tony and Abby Maria.
Yeah, that, Tony, Abby Maria, like Shane Powers and Cass, I think like the world would just explode.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Spencer, is there anything else you want to like get on the record before, or Dom, anything else you have?
I mean, I think we talked through a good bit here. I feel like I did the best I knew how to do with the pregame, and hopefully I didn't really miss the boat, and, you know, hopefully I don't come away from it saying I should have pregamed harder. Yeah, I think it's been fun to get this on the record.
I guess the final question then to wrap this all up neatly is, regardless of what the result ends up being, how does that affect what the experience means to you? Because especially in the eyes of the viewers as well, because you think of someone like Yao Man, who was tremendously popular in his first season, comes back from an All-Star season, goes out early, and then gets surprisingly little press given how popular he was initially. And then you contrast that with, you know, Malcolm, who had 2 back-to-back very strong appearances. How does that factor into your legacy and the way that you see it?
Well, I mean, it feels weird even using the word legacy, but quite frankly, if I were to go out early, my legacy would be pretty much over. I would not be, you know, anything resembling an icon of like modern Survivor. I would not have a legacy to speak of. But, you know, in the words of Jeff Probst, my life is fine. I think that, you know, of course I would rather do well. I'm trying to do well. But I'm very happy to enjoy Survivor regardless of my place in it. I think it's really cool that I got a shot to play twice. I'm really grateful. And I plan on having fun with it. But at the end of the day, I would prefer to, you know, have a good second outing, of course. But if it doesn't happen, I'm going to enjoy Survivor a lot. I'm going to go back to, you know, a good life. It's absolutely like an icing on the cake type thing. And the second you let Survivor define your happiness, the second you put all your eggs in the basket of how you do in Survivor or you attach your worth to it, it's like a sick, twisted form of false external validation. which is not something I'm interested in. So, you know, I feel as if I'm going to be secure and pretty happy regardless. And it's great to go in with that said and with that attitude and just make my entire mission to win.
Yeah, fantastic. You know, at least for me, go out there and make the best decisions you can. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. Hopefully you take it all down and you can come back here and not spoil anything or let anyone else spoil anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, Colin, you and it's been great talking to you, Dom, and, you know, I've Facebook messaging you about, you know, ideas I've had as this pregame has developed has been really helpful, put me in a good state of mind. So I'm really grateful to you guys. And I'm glad we could hop on here, and absolutely, I will not spoil anything.
Great. Well, hey, all the best, man.
Yeah, thanks. Good luck, and hopefully you're a millionaire the next time we get to talk to you.
I hope so as well. I'll see you guys on the other side. Thanks
all
so
right.
much.
All right, see ya.
All right.